Jennifer Martinez.
Pope Francis will be laid to rest Saturday after lying in state for 3 days in St. Peter's Basilica starting tomorrow. I'm Christina Onnestad reporting for Pacifica Radio.
Good afternoon. I'm Parisa Neruzzi, and this is Taking Action on WPFW 89.3 FM. We come to you every Tuesday at 1 o'clock, bringing information and inspiration so that you can take action in our city. We want to fight displacement. We want to save our schools and communities, stand up for justice, build our power, and hold government officials accountable. Taking Action is produced by the grassroots organization Empower DC, and we've been happy to host this show here on WPFW for over a decade now, and want to thank everybody in the studio, our production team, especially Mike Nasella and others. Thank you so much for continuing to support us and other programmers. Thanks to the listeners who continue to support WPFW, fully non-commercial, non-commodified, non-co-opted radio. So everybody continue to do that. I'm happy to be with you today, this beautiful spring day, and to have a number of guests on the line with me today to talk about something really important, which is, you know, has to do with equitable development and has to do with the vision that we have for the future of our city. And it has to do with whether the city should continue to pursue major stadium deals as part of our part of that future, and what impact does that have on neighborhoods, communities, and the other many issues that we care about here in DC. So I'm really excited to have a full slate of guests to explore this topic with. Ed Lazier, Ebony Payne, John Capozzi, and Chris Furnish have all joined me, and I'm going to ask them each to introduce themselves and share a bit more about their affiliation and what organization or community they're representing today as we have this conversation about the future of the RFK Stadium site here in DC. Thank you all for joining me so much. Ebony, I'd love to start with you.
Yes, thank you very much for having me. And hello to all your listeners. My name is Ebony Payne, and I am the advisory neighborhood commissioner for Kingman Park, which is a community located just north of the RFK campus. I am the commissioner that has the entire 190-acre RFK campus in my what's called a single-member district here in D.C., and I have lived in the community since 2001. I am a third-generation Washingtonian and have lived in Kingman Park, and actually my family moved here after the team had already left, and so I've never known what it's like to have the football team here. But I do know many of my neighbors who remember how disruptive it was, and have a lot of strong opinions about what it means for the team to potentially be coming back.
So glad you joined us today. Thanks, Ebony. How about John Capozzi? Can you introduce yourself real quick?
Yeah, thanks, Parisa. And first of all, I grew up listening to WBAI, so a big supporter of the station, and really appreciate you giving us a chance to talk about this, because I'm a resident of Hillcrest, beautiful Hillcrest of Ward 7, and I'm actually been involved actually with Ed Lazier on stadium fights in the past, because we don't believe in public financing of sports facilities and stadiums. And then it's really interesting that this has turned into the mayor's top priority. And so it'll be great to get a chance to talk about that today, and appreciate it.
Thanks, John. And Ed, how about you?
Hey, everyone. Really happy to be here. My name's Ed Lazier. I'm here on behalf of DC for Democracy, which is a political action organization, all-volunteer grassroots organization that endorses candidates who fight for economic and racial justice and then works hard to get them elected, knocking on doors. We're not the kind of PAC that gives money. We give people power to fight corporate power. And that's really what this conversation is about today. As John said, I have been in the trenches on stadium fights in DC for a long time, because some of your listeners know I've also been done a lot of work around the DC budget. And I just see the huge trade-off that we'll talk about more, that subsidizing something that's going to be supporting a billionaire team owner and a billionaire mega profitable corporation versus investing in the city, like, it's just a total no-brainer for me. So really happy to be here and to talk about it with you all.
Thanks so much, Ed. And Chris Furnish, happy to have you as well.
Hello, thanks for having me, and thanks for letting us be on and have this conversation. My name is Chris Furnish. I live in Ward 3. I've lived in DC since 2018, and I've worked on every ballot initiative since the referendum, actually, when the council overturned the will of the voters to raise the tipped minimum wage for tipped workers. So I've worked on that. I've worked on the recall for Jack Evans. I helped on Initiative 81 that decriminalized plant medicines in 2020. 82, we did the tip minimum wage again, and then just passed Initiative 83, which is ranked choice voting and to allow independents to vote in the primary, and then was presented with this opportunity to file a ballot initiative to, you know, stop the construction of a new stadium and instead prioritize affordable housing and real community. So it's an honor to be part of this movement, and really, really excited to have this conversation.
Thanks, Chris. And we'll get more into that ballot effort that you just referenced. And I believe a coalition has formed. Does somebody want to speak to that a little bit? Ed, maybe?
Yeah, I am happy to. So, in addition to the affiliations that you heard, we are all part of the No Billionaires Playground Coalition, which is a coalition that started in October 2023 when we saw the residents of Kingman Park were starting to organize around a stadium. They did a great survey of residents that showed most people oppose the stadium, and they had a session led by Ebony and partners that held the mayor accountable. And so a group of us, including John Capozzi, reached out and said, hey, we should start to plan for the fact that the mayor is going to be pushing for this really hard. So No Billionaires Playground Coalition came to existence in late 2023 to really highlight why we want RFK to be developed for the community, not for a billionaire. And that's the No Billionaires Playground name comes from that survey that the Friends of Kingman Park, or the RFK Future Task Force, did, where in response to the survey, one of the respondents said, you know, RFK is a great opportunity for the community. I don't want to waste it on turning it into a billionaire's playground.
Thanks, Ed. And I'd love to just share the results of that survey, just so your audience is aware. So that survey was conducted in 2023, and it was in preparation for a large meeting that our civic association was having with Mayor Bowser. And we received over 2,000 responses. We targeted the residents who live around the stadium because we really wanted to know how the neighborhood felt. And we found 2/3 of respondents were strongly opposed to a new stadium. And the main takeaway was, yes, that people really wanted to see it developed for the community and not for billionaires. That was a consistent theme across all of the responses.
Yeah, I'd love to get into that a little bit more. Some of the I think there's several reasons why you all and others that have joined along with you are concerned about this proposal. Can we get into them a little bit more? I wonder, Ebony, could you speak a little bit more to the neighborhood level concerns? And if you could sort of describe the community for us a bit as well, the folks that may not be familiar with Kingman Park and the surrounding area.
Yeah, so our neighborhood is filled with a lot of generational homes. So a lot of people who live here inherited their homes from, you know, grandparents, parents, and many have, you know, lived here for multiple generations. And we have a lot of newer residents as well. So it's a very diverse area. But what you find is a lot of families. And one thing in particular I love to bring attention to is we have the Fields at RFK, which was a community-led effort to work with local sports developers, but community developers, where we have playing fields that have different sports leagues, both youth and adult sports leagues, and it's heavily used. We have over 100,000 kids alone using the fields every year, and it was quite they're new. It was they were just built in 2019, and they actually need investment for continued use. And so you know, when we had the mayor come speak to the community, one of the key things that the community was really looking for was having a firm commitment that she would commit to keeping those playing fields. And I asked her, you know, could she commit? And I thought I was throwing her a softball answer. And she said they were always meant to be temporary. And that caused a lot of concern in the neighborhood. And I think it got most parents really alarmed, because there wasn't a lot of awareness that they were temporary in the first place. We also have a skate park, and that was built for a skating, like a festival of some kind many years ago. And we've got kids that take lessons on the skate park. I've spoken to many of the skateboarders, and they're really passionate about how that skate park is one of basically the last in the whole city that gives them a place to be and somewhere safe to congregate and just be a teen. And we haven't really gotten firm commitments on that as well. Keeping that and making sure that it stays. All of that is built on converted parking lots. And so it's, you know, when we're talking about NFL stadiums, they just require a lot of parking lot space. And there's a lot of back and forth about how much parking is going to be needed for the stadium. There's a lot of discussion about garages. And one of the key sticking points is that people really just don't want a ton of surface parking lots for tailgating. They don't want that level of disruption. They don't want the traffic that is going to come. And there's also a big concern about land usage and whether we are maximizing, this is the last plot of land for the city that can be developed for the community, or creating a whole new neighborhood when we have a housing crisis as it is. And we want to make sure that with this last opportunity that we don't squander it, and that the people of DC are going to benefit and not just a group of billionaires who, quite frankly, have plenty of money to, you know, build their own stadium.
All very compelling reasons. I wonder, Ed, if you could chime in a little bit, because I know you and John both referenced previous stadium deals. So we have been through this before, maybe not exactly this this scenario, but could you speak a little bit more to some of the financial concerns I know you and others have raised about public financing for this stadium?
John, you want to go? You want me to go first? All right, I'm going first. John, we got to get you in more. So, I mean, I think this, the reality is across the country that professional sports are an important part of people's lives. It's also just, you know, a hugely profitable and major business with TV deals and advertising and so on. And because professional sports are so popular, it is true that elected officials, mayors, governors, whatever, mayors, I guess, in particular, love to have professional teams in their community. But that then just gives those team owners, who almost always are billionaires, they're certainly all rich and wealthy, in most cases, almost always a billionaire, it gives them this ridiculous leverage over the city to say, we want to come play in your community, will you build our facility? You know, and where else does someone say, we want to put a restaurant in your city, will you build us a restaurant? You know, we want to build in a grocery store, will you pay 100% of the cost of the grocery store? We want to build a factory, you know, particularly when stadiums create pretty crappy part-time, low-wage jobs, right? So there's just this unfortunate leverage where almost every community that has a professional sports team at some point puts public money into it, and often like hundreds of millions or billions of dollars. And it may not be upfront, but it certainly might, it's going to happen at some point. I mean, look at Capital One Arena, where Abe Pola did pay the construction costs way back in the 1990s. But over the years, we have, as a city, continued to subsidize Capital One Arena lots of ways, including $500 million last year to Ted Leonsis, who is another billionaire. Like, you're going to pay at some point. And so the question is like, okay, is this, why would we do this? Is this good for the community? And all the research, well, so, you know, there's just that opportunity cost. Clearly, if you're giving hundreds of millions of dollars of public funds to build a professional sports stadium that's going to benefit the team owner, it's not going to be building schools. It's not going to be building playgrounds. It's not going to be building public hospitals, right? It is an opportunity lost to build public infrastructure, housing, et cetera. And then the question is, what do you get for it? And the research over and over and over again from every respected independent economist is that stadiums don't change local economies because spending on sports is discretionary. If you're spending it at a sports game, you're not spending it bowling or whatever else. Like, people just trade off where they spend their entertainment money. But the research shows when stadiums are put into a community, even if they've never had a sports team before, you look down the road, the number of jobs in the city hasn't grown, the overall incomes haven't grown. Like, it just doesn't pay off economically. So it's horrible economic development. So, you know, why should we be spending $1 billion to get no gain for the city, no new jobs and no net increase income? It just doesn't make any sense, particularly when in the end you're subsidizing a billionaire to build their own facility when they can pay for their own damn stadium, which is a phrase often used in the anti-stadium world, and instead keep that money and invest it in the community.
John, love to hear you.
And Parisa, I would just add, this is John again, that I'm a huge sports fan. Actually, I own season tickets to the Nationals, the Go-Go, this Washington Spirit, the DC United. I used to go to games at RFK all the time. I mean, I really enjoy going to sports, but I thought my season tickets paid for these stadiums and for the team, not public dollars. And so that's why I'm so adamant against this. And, you know, as Ed said, I mean, Josh Harris is worth over $9 billion personally, not to mention his partners. And the NFL's business model is to go around to cities around the country and say, hey, we'll come to your city if you pay for it. And I just don't see the point of that. You know, it took us decades to get a hold of this land at RFK, you know, whether it was, you know, through congressional inaction. And we finally get a hold of it, and we could build a whole new city there in whatever image we want, you know, affordable housing, fields that Ebony mentioned, you know, because there's a huge field shortage in the city to get people out more. There's a whole lot of things we could do there, but once you put a stadium there, that's going to kill that. And the fact is that apparently the mayor, since it is our top priority, wants to give all the land to Mr. Harris and the Commanders so that they can do whatever they want in developing it. And I just don't see that benefiting us in the long run. So, you know, that's why I'm excited that Chris Furness has initiated this ballot initiative, because I think if this is such a big issue, why can't all the citizens vote on it?
Yeah, I think that issue of community voice and, you know, this whole idea of the mayor declaring this her priority without necessarily this being the priority for residents in the city. So let's hear a little bit more, Chris, about your effort and talk to us about what does it mean to do a referendum on this issue?
Well, my definition of ballot initiatives is true democracy. You know, you get out on the streets, talk to voters, we educate them on the issues, give them the facts, and, you know, we ask them to sign the petition. And when we reach a threshold, depending on how many registered voters are in the city, which I think right now we would need about 23,000 signatures to be placed on the ballot next year in the primary election. So yeah, those are the next steps. It's, to me, the most exciting part about campaigning is just being out in the community, hearing, you know, how the citizens feel.
And I know that we have had challenges, you referenced it before, of the council even overturning sometimes the will of the people when we do these referendums. So I guess, what's your analysis of how effective of a tool it would be in a case like this? Is it as much to spark the conversation and the momentum of the people, or is it, you know, really, we're hoping to uphold it as a final decision, or both?
I'd say most people who do sign a petition, it's because they actually support the issue in question. However, there are folks who just believe in democracy and think that it should be decided by the people at the end of the day. So, you know, you guys mentioned before, this is a lot of money we're talking about, and to just have the mayor be able to make that decision for the whole city is just the opposite of democracy, in my opinion. Mm-hmm.
It seems that there's a couple of things at play here. I mean, one is whether to have a stadium at all, and then the other is whether or not we pay for it, right? Or how much of it the district taxpayers pay for. I think you all, though, have also expressed vision of alternatives to a stadium. And I'd like to hear a little bit more about that. I don't know, Ebony, if you want to start. You did talk about some of the existing uses that the community would like to see preserved. Has there been a conversation with the community to really think about other visions, alternative views for what should happen on the site?
Not in any real meaningful way. As I mentioned, you know, we have 27 acres of playing fields, multi-use playing fields. The community was actually expecting an expansion of those fields prior to the team switching ownership. And then it seemed as soon as the ownership was changed, that it became just all about the NFL and everything that the community was expecting and wanting and hoping for just took the back burner and was just put on the back seat. And I have not felt that there has been any real meaningful engagement at a community level. There's been community meetings and we've had people, you know, politicians show up, but there's never been really a commitment. And what I mean by that is if we're talking about, for example, the fields, the last community meeting I attended with the mayor was with our Ward 7 council member at Eastern High School. And there she finally gave, after a year of intense local pressure, she finally gave a commitment that the fields would stay. But that was prior to the news of the team being the master developer of the entire campus. So it's like, which one is it? Is the community going to get a set aside and some real meaningful investment, or is it just going to be a playground for the NFL where they get to decide what is built where and when and get to decide who has access to it and who doesn't? You know, one thing I hear a lot from my constituents is, you know, concern that there's only 8 to 10 events every year, give or take a few concerts. And even the concerts, it's like there's only 2 artists that are selling out stadiums right now. And who knows if they'll ever go on a tour like that again. And so people don't want to see this massive complex sitting empty 300 days plus a year. It's getting heavily used now. And as John mentioned, there is such a shortage of field space for the whole entire city. We have people from all over the region come to utilize these fields. You know, and I also hear a big need for affordable housing. People, that comes up a lot. Grocery stores, you know, this area is quite frankly a food desert. We don't have a lot of options. And there's just a big concern that it's just going to crowd out all of the potential for meaningful development and things that the surrounding community needs.
I hear that, and it's really a shame that the city wouldn't prioritize a robust planning process that explores all options instead of just, you know, saying, okay. So I'd like to hear from some of the other guests too about this alternative visions and what are you thinking or what are you hearing? Ed, did you want to add into that conversation?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple things I want to say. One is, you know, that clearly the mayor decided that having the NFL, having the Commanders in DC was her top economic priority when she hired a new deputy mayor for economic development. That person said that was her top priority above things like affordable housing, which was like, okay, not my priorities. And she has sort of shifted how she advocates for the stadium. At first she said, well, every development needs an anchor and a stadium is a great anchor. And at the February Eastern High School Forum where she spoke, Ashley Ruff and ANC in Ward 7 spoke up and said, I love anchors too. How about a grocery store for an anchor? And Ashley Ruff is going to be speaking at an event we're having next week that I know we're going to talk about. And, you know, the mayor sort of realized, oops, maybe I shouldn't mention anchor because people could easily say a hospital, a grocery store, or whatever. So now she says we need to be a sports economy. That's how we're going to recover from all these federal layoffs. But, you know, as we talked about just a few minutes ago, a professional sports economy is a losing economy for everybody except the team owners, right? Because the more sports stadiums you have, the more part-time, low wage, no health benefits, jobs you have, and the more money that's being sucked out of our pockets and going to these team owners who don't necessarily live or invest in our communities, as opposed to an economy that's more organic and based on small businesses where the people own also live in the community. So if they're making money, they're reinvesting it in the community and they're hiring their neighbors. And, you know, it's just a very different set of ideas. So, she keeps justifying why we need a stadium in different ways, but they're in the end all just a cover for her passion for having the team here for some reason that I don't fully understand. I do want to also address housing as well real briefly, which is the city has on the books and for a long time has a law that said if the city has public land and then it turns it over to be developed as housing, up to a third of it has to be affordable at different income levels for the life of that building. And it's done because the people who buy the land from the city pay almost nothing for it, even though it's worth a lot. And they use that savings to sort of subsidize the affordable housing that they create, if that makes sense. So it's a way for the city to create affordable housing without having to put in a penny of tax dollars. And that's really important right now because the city's broke and we're not creating any new affordable housing this year because we're just spending all of our affordable housing money to preserve what we have. There's an estimate that's coming out soon that we could build as many as 10 to 15,000 housing units at RFK if there is not a stadium. And that means 3 to 5,000 new affordable housing units that we would not have otherwise. And it's just, I guess, finally important to say the mayor has not said how big a stadium would be when you include parking. Every estimate we have is there's only 100 acres there that can be developed. And a stadium is at least 50 acres, even with a small amount of parking. So at least half of that affordable housing opportunity disappears the minute you decide to put a stadium there. And that's just a shameful lost opportunity, in my opinion.
John.
Yeah. I would just say that you described exactly what should happen, which is we need a process. Like a normal process is we just get a hold of this huge piece of land that we can do anything we want with. So typically you meet with the community and say, hey, what would you like to see there? Then based on that, you'd have some sort of RFP process where people would bid on the idea of getting to get that free land because it is free, right? We just got it. And then we would pick the best proposal based on at least one criteria, which is we wouldn't have to put in any public money if you're going to develop this land. And so this affordable housing idea, or, you know, whether it's fields or anything the community would think of, and I can imagine the community is not thinking about parking garages and NFL stadiums because people can't even afford to buy a ticket to an NFL game, much less be able to see some benefit from it. And as everybody said, with 10 games a year, maybe some concerts thrown in, I mean, that thing is going to sit empty. It's not going to help us. And so I see a vision where we're generating tax money by building housing and other things. We're actually getting people, you know, to move there. I mean, look at the Navy Yard. People want to move near the water. The Anacostia River is right there. This is a prime piece of development land. Why not go through a real process to do that? But instead, the mayor has chosen this other path. And I think that's why we need an initiative, because then everybody can weigh in and say, hey, this is not the direction we want to go, and let's have a real process.
So the land was somewhat recently transferred to the district government, right? From the federal, I think it was under control of the National Park Service. Was there any stipulation in that transfer? And is now the federal government's hands completely off in terms of what the district chooses to do?
I can speak a little to that. It is still a National Park Service land, so it is still federally owned. What Congress did was give the city a 99-year lease extension. Mm-hmm. Our last lease was expiring in 2038, so no developer was willing to put any investment into something with an expiring lease. There is 30% of the land that is supposed to remain open open space, and they are supposed to keep access to the Anacostia River along the Anacostia River Trail open to the public. And all of that is actually part of why the space is so limited. I think when we hear 190 acres, which is really 174 acres, because a portion of that is the armory, which won't be redeveloped, you know, it starts to really whittle away once you actually start to look at the available space that's available for development. And so every time you take acreage away, it just reduces the opportunity for new homes, for new playing fields, and just opportunity for grocery stores, for a new fire station, like whatever it is, restaurants, bars, whatever it is that, you know, would benefit the community, it just gets crowded out by parking. And, you know, the mayor swears up and down that she's not interested in excessive amounts of parking lots, but the reality is that the NFL just requires a lot of parking spaces for tailgating. And until I see a plan on paper that, you know, that shows the community that it can all be done, I don't believe it.
Yeah, there's a tool on your website I saw. I wonder if one of you can speak to this, where you've compared the land area to other stadiums. Can somebody share a bit about that?
I'm happy to. Don't want some dead space here. Okay. Yeah. So it's a good time to mention. So the No Billionaires Playground has a website, mm-hmm. and the website is norfkstadium.com. Thought No Billionaires Playground might be just a little too long and hard to type. So norfkstadium.com. And one of the volunteers in our coalition, two volunteers, I should say, one of them being my wife. Thank you, my wife. put together this map story that allows you to look at how RFK currently is used. It's a map. And then allows you to overlay new stadiums from around the country over RFK. And it just reminds you that RFK sort of oddly shaped the space, and that NFL stadiums are enormous when you include the parking. And yeah, that is really likely that an NFL stadium is just gonna, whatever the right word is, I forget what the right word is, it's just gonna whatever dominate that space, and whatever is left over is what the community will get. And that's just not the way it should be, particularly when the stadium benefits primarily going to be for the team owner. So yeah, if you go to our website, our map story is one of the options at the top, and you can scroll through and overlay a bunch of other stadiums on RFK and just see how little space there is when a football stadium is built.
Mm. I want to talk a little bit about the politics involved here. I mean, we started talking about the transfer or the lease from the federal government to the district. So now what? I mean, the mayor is saying this is her priority. She's made a deal with the owners, but is she the final decider? How does this have to get approved? What are some of the next steps that this would need to go through from a political perspective?
Well, I think it's worth noting that the mayor hasn't said she's made a deal yet. The news breaking that was broken last week by Mark Seagraves from NBC4 came as a real shock to a lot of people, I think including the mayor. And given that the city is talking about major budget cuts of up to $1 billion, it was not an ideal time to be talking about spending almost $1 billion in taxpayer money for a new stadium, or as they like to say, infrastructure. I think it's important to note that the way that this is being presented is that it's this great deal for the city because the team is going to put up $2.5 billion of their own money, which is apparently the most NFL teams ever offer. You know, to that I would say it still does not negate the fact that $850 million+ of our own local tax money is going to be spent on changes that, quite frankly, we just shouldn't have to spend a dime, really. We have other needs. I can tell you as the representative of the community that lives just north of the stadium, we are dealing with really serious public safety concerns. We have crime that is quite frankly out of control, and we've been told repeatedly there's not enough money in the budget for public safety resources, officers, you know, just it runs the gamut. People are really looking for more community supports, and we're always told, oh, well, we don't have it in the budget, you know, we're just so our everything is stretched thin. But then you, whenever it has comes time to give it to a billionaire, all of a sudden you can find all of this money in the budget. I find that really unacceptable. And it's not something that we should be paying for. I recently heard that Maryland was offering the team more public money, which I found interesting because, you know, if they were offering more and the team is so interested in the RFK space, well, why would we be giving away any subsidies? If they want to come here that badly, they can finance it all 100% themselves.
Yeah, no. I would just add that, like, well, you mentioned the politics of it. I mean, the city council is going to have to weigh in on this as well as the mayor if public money is going to be used. But she always likes to talk about this is capital dollars, not operating expenses. Well, yesterday she went to Deanwood at the Metro stop and announced with our council member that they're going to do some development at the Metro stop. But it turns out there's no money for that. Well, that is the capital budget. So what if we took this $800 million and directed it towards projects in the community? First of all, that she already announced, and secondly, that people would like to see in Deanwood. I mean, it's only a couple miles from the stadium. I mean, we could certainly use it. And I think that when you talk about the city council voting on this, I mean, let's put it this way. We are a very well-informed citizen activists, but we're up against billionaires and you know, the mayor, and that is a challenge. But even the city council would look at the idea that citizens are you know, uninterested in this. And frankly, if Josh Harris, who's the owner of the Commanders, wanted to announce he's going to build a stadium tomorrow and pay for it, he would have already done that. So this really is about us paying for it. And I think citizens are going to be concerned about that in a way that, you know, I think politicians will hear that.
I would add a couple things to what has been said. So the expectation is that the mayor's proposal to subsidize the NFL stadium and NFL stadium will be in her budget that she submits sometime in the next few weeks. And our budget is not in good shape because Congress has been messing with it, because downtown has been weak, because federal layoffs have meant fewer people going, you know, having income and spending money in the community. We've already had our chief financial officer said our revenue is going down, not up, which is not good when budget time is coming and you have to have a balanced budget. So she's likely to put out a budget that has almost $1 billion to subsidize an NFL stadium while also doing things like taking away the pay equity fund for childcare workers, which provides a $10,000 to $20,000 income boost for people who work in childcare, a very hard job that actually requires advanced education and yet has been underpaid everywhere in the nation for too long. We've just started paying childcare teachers better, and the mayor may take that away. That's something that Empower DC works on a lot. Teresa is emergency rental assistance, knowing that we don't want people to be evicted. Evictions just hit a 10-year high in the District of Columbia. Shameful, horrible, traumatic experience, and we're at a record level. And you and I know the mayor's not going to put out a budget that puts very much money into emergency rental assistance. So just think about, you know, writing an $850 million check at the time the budget comes out to a billionaire team owner. Are you telling people who are facing eviction, we don't have any money for you? Or are you telling teachers who might have like moved to a nicer apartment now that they had a little bit better pay that they may have to move again? It's just, that is what's likely to come, and the council will have to approve it, as John said. There, and I think that contrast will put some pressure on the council. And we've had some council members already say they're not crazy about using public funds for a stadium. Chairman Mendelson in particular, you know, right? Obviously a really important part of the council, has said he doesn't mind a stadium, he just doesn't want to pay for it. Well, it'll be interesting to see how he responds to $1 billion paying for it. And there are other council members who have said the same thing. Even council member McDuffie, who has penned op-ed pieces in the Washington Post saying we need the Commanders back in DC. When the city got control of the site finally, I saw him quoted in the news saying the team should be thinking about paying for this because the city's finances are tight. So there's a broad range of council members who I think are not inclined to spend public money or are going to feel pressure, certainly from us, about that contrast of subsidizing this corporate entity and this billionaire team owner at a time when people are suffering and we're cutting services to them.
And just to add to, you know, this money just appearing out of nowhere, like we don't have a budget to fund a special election, you know, a special election in Ward 8. We don't have the budget to implement funding for Initiative 83, which the voters passed overwhelmingly in the last election. So how is it that we just magically have almost $1 billion to give to a sport, you know, a professional sports team, when again, the NFL last year alone made $15 billion in profits. And it's just like, why are we taking money away from taxpayers and paying for a billionaire's playground? That's like asking a single unemployed mother to pay for a third yacht, Jeff Bezos. Like, it just doesn't make sense. And you want to talk about, you know, this has really a domino effect. We're taking a team away from Maryland. Guess what? Maryland's going to be in the same position. And Maryland is a bigger, you know, place than D.C. At least I live in Ward 3. If we did have a stadium in RFK, it wouldn't be much for me to go over there. But still, I'm not getting any benefits of a stadium from my neighborhood. So just think about Maryland. Somebody lives on the Eastern Shore and they're still having to pay in for a stadium that they don't even get to enjoy at all, don't get the benefits of it all. It's just this negative domino effect.
How does the referendum address this? And can you explain a little bit more about where you are in the process of that?
So the referendum would basically say in the language that the initiative would mandate the creation of a special purpose zone for the stadium land. For which the Zoning Commission could permit residential, commercial, recreational, educational, and cultural uses, but not use for a stadium for professional athletic teams. So it's really like a zoning initiative where we don't want a stadium, we want to prioritize.
That's very interesting. And so right now you're still in the process of getting this approved to be on the ballot, right?
Correct. So last week we went down to the Board of Elections. We filed for, you know, paperwork, did all the paperwork to create the campaign, opened up our bank account. And so now we just have to wait until July 2nd, which is the hearing for the Board of Elections, excuse me, to determine whether or not what we submitted is proper subject matter. And if it is deemed to be so, then we will get our petitions and be able to hit the streets to collect signatures.
I'd like to hear more about other ways that you all are intervening in this process, any organizing efforts related to it and what listeners can look forward to being part of.
Well, I will start. Oh, go ahead, John.
So I was just going to mention our forum that we have coming up on April 29th, 6 to 8 p.m. over at the Hill Center, 921 Pennsylvania, which we've invited everybody to. But I hope Ed has the full list of speakers. But obviously, you know, Charles Allen, who's the Ward 6 council member, has been adamantly opposed to this, has expressed it in many ways and many times, but he'll be there. And we certainly ask every citizen who wants to learn more about it, this is their chance to come and hear about whether it's the stadium itself, the ridiculous amount of public money that the mayor would like to put into this, and just generally how stadiums don't create an economic benefit.
And also, if folks are interested in getting involved with the ballot initiative process, you can go to homesnotstadiums.org and click Get Involved. We'll get your information and you'll be the first to know when we get the petition.
And similarly, if you go to our No Billionaires Playground campaign site, remember that's norfkstadium.com. You can sign an email action that goes to the mayor and council saying you don't want a stadium at RFK. You can also just add your name to a mailing list. And you can also donate to support our campaign.
What are you hoping to be the next step after this forum that you're holding? Because I know that, you know, Ebony mentioned there's been a couple of community meetings. You have a forum coming up. Is the goal at this point to influence the mayor and her budget that's coming out? Is it more to build a constituency that would be more vocal and involved as this comes to the city council? Just wondering sort of where your efforts are focused.
I can speak a little to that. One thing I really hope happens, and something that we didn't really touch on, was an environmental impact assessment. A lot of people don't realize that the land is quite heavy in lead contamination and other PCBs. Back when Jack Kent Cooke owned the team and had plans to build a second stadium on the campus, they had to do an environmental impact assessment in 1993. And that found large amounts of heavy metal contamination. And something that I just haven't seen any real plans from the mayor to do another assessment. In fact, evidently, if she just builds a new stadium where the old stadium was, there doesn't have to be an environmental impact assessment done. There would have to be one for anything built where the parking lots are. And that's a real concern. It's one of the top concerns of the community. So that is something I hope to see happen. The other thing I'm hoping to see happen is that the BOE approves this ballot initiative. I think from a community perspective, we've pretty much lost confidence that the mayor is going to listen or care at all about what we want to see. And so, you know, really at this point, giving the community and the entire city and the voters of the city an opportunity to weigh in and have their voices heard is really what we need to see moving forward.
And, you know, I'll just add that, you know, the No Billionaires Playground Coalition is just going to continue to do what we can to show DC council members, since they are going to play a critical vote, that residents across the city want city money to be invested in the community. And they really do see RFK as a potential to develop this beautiful, inclusive neighborhood on the Anacostia River, and that it would not be possible if an NFL stadium is there. And certainly that we don't want the city to subsidize a stadium. And I think the ballot initiative sort of is based on the idea that even though it's a zoning issue, it is also a fiscal issue, because as we talked about, you know, a couple times, there's just really no way to have a professional sports stadium without the city having to open up its wallet substantially at some point. And so if we really want to protect the city's resources for us, the things that we and our community want, that's what's needed. And so we're going to be trying to lift up the voices, particularly those who say, oh, you know, longtime residents, particularly Black residents, they really want a stadium. When our own polling shows, if you ask residents, would you rather see housing and neighborhood development or a stadium? Overall in the city, it's 55% want housing and neighborhood development, only 39% said a stadium. And the greatest support for housing and neighborhood development was in Ward 8 in that survey.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that we really need to reckon with the unique nature of the District of Columbia. You know, this is a city that is structurally inequitable. You know, it is set up to fail, I believe, just the way that we, you know, lack equal representation in Congress. But then the fiscal impact in particular of having the federal government untaxed land, to have all the, you know, nonprofit and university untaxed land, to not being able to have a commuter tax, to having, you know, overlords overseeing our budget and our legislation. I think that the city has, the leadership in the city has two options. One is to really be committed to community development and investing in the grassroots and the local economy, or to continue to chase after these big boondoggles and these billionaires and to make this a playground for the rich. And that's the choice that they've been making over the last few decades. And it's at the cost of, you know, tens of thousands of Black and brown residents who've been displaced, and the loss of, you know, neighborhood culture and history. And I think we're really at a crossroads now as we see more of these billionaires coming into the city with the Trump administration and everybody related to that, you know, people like Elon Musk making plays for certain. I was saying he was supposed to be a bidder on the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan. That didn't end up happening, but it would just spark to me like, oh, okay, they're now coming in, they're now staking their financial claim and again trying to profit off of this city. And I think for me, this is a reason even more than in the past to be very clear that no, we don't want to go in the direction of this is going to be a place of prosperity for the rich only, and that we're going to continue to develop make everybody else, you know, collateral damage, sacrifice everybody else for this glitz and glam that we're trying to go after. And I'm very disturbed that the mayor has not meaningfully addressed the housing crisis. Instead of, you know, you talked about eviction, the rising eviction and all of this, she's, the narrative has been more and more towards blaming tenants, making lies up about tenants, you know, cheating, not ever talking about the rent maybe being too high, you know, or putting some controls in place to prevent people from being so cost burdened with rent. You know, no conversation about while our wages here are higher than the federal minimum wage, still completely inadequate to survive in the city. So I do think that this is about the stadium, it's about the land, but it's really about a much bigger conversation, right? And so I do appreciate the work that you all are doing to make this a conversation. And I would just invite everybody, in our last couple of minutes to remind the listeners how to follow you, how to stay informed, how to get involved, and how to attend your upcoming event.
Well, I'll go. So again, our campaign website for No Billionaires Playground is norfkstadium.com. When you go there, you can register for the April 29th event, which is from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Hill Center, as John said. You also can just go straight to register for that event. It's a bit.ly, so it's bit.ly/, and then case sensitive, capital R, capital F, capital K, and then lowercase forum, F-O-R-U-M. That's all you need to register for the event. And look forward to seeing you. But if you go to our website, you see lots of stuff, including our map story and a way to get on our mailing list so that you get updates.
And if you're interested in being part of the ballot initiative process, again, you can go to homesnotstadiums.org, click get involved and sign up. And our social media, we're on Instagram, Facebook, Blue Sky, and Twitter at homesnotstadium, singular, not without the S.
I want to thank all of you again, and I appreciate your efforts. Welcome back anytime to give us updates on this and related issues, especially Ebony. I know, you know, you're an elected official in the community, unpaid. You're going to be, I think, working pretty hard in these coming weeks and months on this and other things. So thank you for your efforts, and everybody, continue to put forth a vision. This alternate vision, community development, which unfortunately DC has not done a great job of modeling, but we can do that. And yes, public land is the precious resource with which we have to actually achieve that. Thank you all so much for being on today. Thanks to the listeners for listening to Taking Action. Stay tuned for Capitalism, Race, and Democracy, but first the news. We'll be right back.
WPFW presents Still We Rise, our 48th anniversary celebration on Friday, April 25th, 7 to 11 p.m. at Martin's Crosswinds in Greenbelt. Entertainment includes Navasha Deya and more. That's Still We Rise, WPFW's 48th anniversary celebration. Details at WPFWFM.org.
Good afternoon. For WPFW Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Darnia Samuels. Here are some headlines for this hour. Today, Secretary of State Marco Rubio unveiled plans to make huge changes to the State Department, which include reducing staff in the United States by 15% while closing and consolidating more than 100 bureaus worldwide. To be specific, 734 bureaus and offices are to be reorganized into 602, as well as transition 137 offices to another location within the department to, quote, increase efficiency. It is unclear if the reorganization would be implemented through an executive order or other means, but according to Rubio, these changes are supposed to, quote, meet the immense challenges of the 21st century and put America first, end quote. The latter being the Trump administration's mandate. Ahead of the changes at the State Department, the administration has already slashed jobs and funding across agencies, from the Education Department to Health and Human Services. It has also dismantled the U.S. Agency for International Development. The U.S. Supreme Court is hearing arguments today over the religious rights of parents in Maryland to remove their children from elementary school classes using storybooks with LGBTQ characters. The books in question tell narratives about two men falling in love, a girl wishing for another girl to be her Valentine, and a transgender child. Montgomery County Public Schools introduced these storybooks in an effort to reflect the district's diverse population. However, parents sued after the school system stopped allowing them to pull their children from lessons that included those books. The parents argue that public schools cannot force kids to participate in instruction that violates their faith, and they pointed to the ability to opt out of sex education classes. The schools, however, said that allowing these children to opt out of the lessons had become disruptive. Lower courts supported the school's decision, thus prompting the parents to appeal to the Supreme Court. A new beginning. That's how Pope Francis described death before his own took place yesterday at his Vatican residence. He died at age 88 from a stroke and heart failure. Since that time, several public figures have paid tribute to him online, calling him a fearless leader, an ally to many, and as someone who seemed to remember that Christ's love enveloped believers and non-believers. During his 12 years leading the Catholic Church, Pope Francis discussed climate change, the plight of migrants, and peace through dialogue. Many Latin countries, including the Pope's home country, Argentina, will be holding national days of mourning in his honor, as Pope Francis was the first Latin American pontiff in history. Currently, his body is lying in an open coffin in the chapel of his papal residence. Tomorrow, his coffin will be transferred to St. Peter's Basilica, where he will lie in state until his funeral this Saturday. Meanwhile, cardinals are gathering in Rome to elect a new pope, a process that typically takes between 2 and 3 weeks. To the D.C. area, the Chesapeake Bay Bridge in Maryland is known among residents as a way to get to Ocean City, Maryland, Rehoboth Beach, Delaware, and other nearby destinations. This week, the Maryland Transportation Authority, or MDTA, released plans to begin a new phase of improvement on the Bay Bridge. This comes after the National Transportation Safety Board, or NTSB, labeled the bridge as one of 68 bridges that are at risk of collapse from a vessel collision. The NTSB criticized MDTA's failure to contact safety inspections that NTSB said could have flagged vulnerabilities with Baltimore's Francis Scott Key Bridge before its fatal collapse in March of 2024. Meanwhile, the MDTA emphasizes that the Bay Bridge has been inspected every year for the last 30 years and, quote, was found to be in safe and satisfactory condition. In today's weather, it's currently about 79 degrees in D.C. That's all for your headline news this hour. For WPFW Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Darnia Samuels. Please be safe and thank you for listening.